It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
My friends, I know politics can be confusing. In our tradition of making the obvious obvious, I now offer a special simplification. Yes, it's time for another episode of Why I Am Qualified to Be President with your old pal, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I do appreciate it, and I'm happy to be here. I am qualified, but alas, I am not on the ballot. So let's talk about who is on the ballot. Let's talk about Kamala Harris. She's done many interviews and several town halls. Apparently, her campaign managers are also computer savvy because they programmed her with one default setting to answer any question about what she will do differently than Joe Biden. I do sympathize with the predicament she's in. Usually when former vice presidents run for office, the president they served under has stepped down. Joe has not. Kamala is still his vice president. To distance herself from him, she would have to criticize her own boss, and that violates traditional protocol. So far, very understandable. But it goes beyond that. Back when she thought she could sell his policies these last 4 years, she bragged that she was the last person in the room on every one of their decisions. Well, that would include the economy, that would include the open border, the Afghanistan evacuation debacle, and when asked why she never came forward with Biden's failing mental condition, since she was with him so much and the last person in the room so often, she really has to be careful. The moment she claims she saw no problem, she sounds like she's lying or unable to see what everyone else in the country saw every time the guy opened his mouth. And the very reason he was removed because of the way he was opening his mouth during that debate. On the other hand, if she admits she saw the problem, well then why didn't she do anything about it? The Constitution actually demands taking action when a president is no longer fit. And so, when asked how her presidency will be different, Kamala's answer, like a recording selected from the same jukebox over and over, says, "Well, obviously, I'm not Joe Biden, and I'm not Donald Trump." Well, gee, golly, come to think of it, I'm not Joe Biden either, and I'm not Donald Trump. Apparently, that qualifies me to be President of the United States. If only I'd thought about this during the primaries. Oh, yeah. Almost forgot. I also was raised in a middle-class home. Triple resume! Let me read to you a very interesting email that I received from one of my readers. "Bob, I recently talked to a student of the Master's College who didn't feel comfortable focusing on politics at all. His reasoning was that Jesus didn't get into discussions about the local politics and said to render to Caesar what is Caesar's." Of course, my friend there is pointing out the fact that Jesus said pay taxes. He goes on. "He pointed out that Jesus seemed to advise us to submit to the government that God allowed to be put in place." Okay, let me respond to that. Ironically, while some pastors do preach that Christians should not be involved with politics, the political landscape continues to threaten more and more religious expression. from prohibiting prayer at public school, these are things we've seen for years, to censoring theories of intelligent design in classrooms, to outlawing public displays of a cross, even as memorials for fallen policemen, to agendas seeking the same kind of hate speech legislation in America that already poisoned Canada, where they made it against the law to critique the religion of Islam, even if you were talking about it in a loving, respectful discussion. And of course, do I need to mention churches being told that they cannot meet at all because of COVID-19? Or in other cases, well, yeah, you're allowed to meet, but you can't sing. Our once open society is becoming increasingly hostile toward Christian values and Christian liberty. Not only do Christians have a responsibility to stand up to the tide of the times, I am convinced things would not be so bad had we drawn a line in the sand much earlier. Yes, of course, Jesus is our example, but Jesus spoke out quite dramatically against the political structure of ancient Israel, namely a corrupt priesthood, part of what they called the Sadducee Party, led by the high priest put in place by the Roman government. No, Jesus did not go to the polls and vote, but then no such opportunity existed for first century Jews. Agreeing to pay taxes did not mean Jesus merely stood by without speaking his mind. Indeed, it can be argued that Jesus' outspoken comments against the political machine of his day were the very catalysts of his execution. How about Jesus' followers? Paul would serve as a good example, in as much as he penned about half the New Testament books, and Paul would be at odds with many of today's church leaders, make no mistake. Often I hear Christian speakers suggest that we should just stand in the sidelines, allowing the chips to fall where they may, even as Christian freedoms are eroded before our very eyes. If America turns sour, they say, sounding very pious, and goes the way of a dictatorship, so be it. After all, persecution is good for the church, isn't it? Besides, maybe the next wave of persecution will bring about the Great Tribulation, and then Jesus will return just 7 years later. Well, Paul believed in the second coming. He also longed for a more peaceful world in the present. To him, they were not mutually exclusive ideas. Look at what he wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 2. I urge then, first of all, that requests, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for everyone, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. This is good and pleases God our Savior, who wants all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. Okay, now, at a first glance, this passage would not seem to have anything at all to do with politics. But we must ask ourselves, what is the benign motive behind any kind of political involvement or activism? Would not the ultimate goal be to bring about a more peaceful society? With such an understanding in mind, we see Paul making two very important points in this passage. First, there is nothing wrong with desiring a peaceful life. Indeed, God wouldn't be urging us to pray for peace if peace wasn't his ideal. This flies against the myth about persecution being good for the church. True, God can bless his people even in times of persecution, but Paul certainly did not desire those trials or feel he had to cooperate with bringing them about. The next important point that Paul is making, peace is evidently conducive to the spreading of the gospel. Yes, the gospel has also been known to flourish in the midst of persecution, but apparently it spreads even better in a benign environment. Peace and the gospel go hand in hand. Most Christians had no legal rights in those days. Very few were Roman citizens. They did not live under a republic and democracy as we do. Prayer was their only opportunity to influence imperial decisions. Today we live in a unique time in history when the governors and the governed are one and the same. If Paul were alive today, if he were here with us now, could we not picture him offering additional instruction along with the command to pray? Would he not also ask us to vote, write our senators, lobby for causes? Of course he would. In Paul's specific case, he was a Roman citizen, a rare privilege for Jews under Roman dominion. And he used that citizenship to his advantage by appealing to an audience with Caesar while on trial before Governor Festus and King Agrippa. You can read about that toward the end of the book of Acts. But knowing that most of his brothers and sisters had no such similar recourse, he called them to the only means possible for changing the hearts of kings and emperors, at least kings and emperors that they were never going to meet personally, and that was prayer. Prayer is still our most treasured asset in present society, but it is no longer our only opportunity. Remember, Jesus once said, "From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded." As Christians encourage a free society, they realize that freedom of speech protects all messages, not merely the Christian message. We know that if we do not stand by another person's rights to express even the ideas we disagree with, then sooner or later, any opinion is in jeopardy. But political involvement from Christians does more than protect the gospel. My friends, it is also a part of the gospel. As an evangelist, nothing is more important to me than the gospel of Jesus Christ. Still, evangelicals tend to stress one side of this message to the neglect of the other side. Side A, the most familiar part, is that Jesus came to forgive us and heal us from the sins we commit. But there is a flip side. Very early in Jesus' ministry, he read a passage of scripture aloud in the synagogue and then claimed that he had come in fulfillment of these words. We read about this incident in the Gospel of Luke chapter 4, and he's reading from a scroll of Isaiah 61. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Notice that phrase, "preach good news to the poor." This is what the very word gospel means, good news. Typically, we take that to mean the good news that we can be forgiven of our sins. True enough, but only partly true. Think, if forgiveness from sin is all of the good news, in what way is our message a gospel for the poor? Apparently, Jesus is also talking about the good news of being delivered from the effects of sin. In the case of the poor, the specific sin they are being rescued from is the greed and apathy of a society who cast them aside. But Jesus came to right many wrongs in addition to poverty. He intended a complete deliverance from sin across the board, be it the psychological effects of a dysfunctional family, or the spiritual physical effects of a demon, or the cruelty of an unjust government. Ultimate freedom, of course, will not take place until people die and resurrect in heaven or experience the total redemption of the world in fulfillment of biblical prophecy, whichever comes first. In the meantime, God calls upon his children to eradicate sin as much as possible. The ancient Jewish understanding of Messiah was that of a man who would rescue God's people from her oppressive enemies. One of the problems Israel had with Jesus is that he did not free the Jews from their enemies, and their enemies then, of course, were the Romans. Scripture does teach that with Jesus' second coming, he will do exactly this: rescue Israel from surrounding, attacking nations, and rule the entire world benevolently. Christians and Orthodox Jews both await this triumphal king. They merely disagree as to whether or not he already visited the earth once before. No, the belief in a future kingdom is not a cue for Christians to go out conquering the world out of force as if they run a jihad. So relax, take a deep breath, stop clutching your chest. As I said earlier, the only purpose of Christians is to keep society free for everybody. Neither does the belief in a return of Jesus translate into any notion of Jews receiving preferential treatment by God in the future. Israel may be the vortex of prophetic events, but it is the entire world that Jesus comes to deliver. In the meantime, Christ asks us to announce his kingdom peacefully, helping people as best we can. But even as we await Christ's ultimate rule, there are many injustices that God wants us to intervene with. One who truly loves God loves people. If we love people, we must protest when they are being mistreated. This means that part of the gospel is speaking out against evil. Abolitionists used Christianity to condemn slavery. Martin Luther King used Christianity to condemn segregation. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Lutheran pastor who lived in Germany under the Nazis, so for him, a love for Jesus translated into a protest against Hitler. Such obvious examples from history serve to remind us that when Christians speak out about what's going on in the world and call others to moral, ethical action, it fulfills our biblical mandate. Sometimes that means political involvement. Other times it means speaking out when the political paradigm of a country makes true democracy impossible and verbal protest is all we have left.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. Always good to have fellow columnist and co-host Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, good to be here.
The day of reckoning draweth nigh.
Yes, it does.
This is the night of the big predictions.
Yes, I'm going to get through some predictions here. I have a lot of stuff to cover, so I'm going to actually move pretty quickly. But I did want to mention something just before I plunge into the analysis here. Everybody, you know, saw the images of President Trump at the McDonald's. Great move on his part.
One of the most hilarious and brilliant stunts I've ever seen.
But one of the things I also saw was a lone woman surrounded by thousands and thousands of Trump supporters screaming and yelling about how horrible Trump was. You know, and she said a bunch of things I don't agree with, but I just sat there and looked at her in the crowd by herself, surrounded by thousands of Trump supporters. She was safe.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I can tell you, if I was there, I'd have some thoughts, but if somebody tried to do anything physically with her, myself, I'm sure many other people would not have put up with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not feel the same thing about going, I can tell you, in 2000s of screaming Kamala Harris.
No, that already happened. There were two Christians kicked out of one of their rallies, and people were shoving them and spitting on them and
right.
doing all
That's
kinds
just,
of things.
That just, yeah. It was an image that made me think about that. But brings me to the subject is that right now, you know, we watch Fox News. We get lots of news from other sources, maybe Newsmax. You go on the internet and you go to sites to get information. I do the same thing. I do lots and lots of alternative sources. But here's the thing is, you know, as great as Fox News is, dominates the cable news stations, it gets 2 to 2.5 million viewers a night. CBS, NBC, and ABC get anywhere from 5.5 to 6.5 million viewers a night each. Yeah. Each.
And they lie through their teeth.
And then you add in CNN and MSNBC.
NPR.
Right, NPR. So when you take all that together, there's an awful lot of our fellow citizens who are getting information that I don't believe is accurate, that I believe creates a distorted view of reality, but they do believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're looking at an election here, they're just looking at Donald Trump saying, what is going on? How can he be so popular? And they really are frightened and they're disconcerted. And if he wins, they're going to be having some real problems with this.
I believe there's going to be riots all over the land.
And even you have those people there, but even other people that don't riot, they're going to be very shocked and saddened.
Like that woman in 2016 that they showed on the street covering her head and screaming out.
Yeah, well, but even people quietly just sitting at home thinking, oh my gosh. What is going on with our nation? All I'm saying is it's a very sad situation. We have such a nation there where you have this bifurcation here. But just to kind of keep that in mind and maybe grant some grace. I mean, people are still responsible. But let's try to grant some grace to folks on this. What we're doing there. That's just something I was thinking about. Let's just plunge in here. So there's a number of big reasons why I believe there's a lot of factors. Well, there is a lot of factors favoring a Trump victory, and I'm going to kind of cover some of them. Now, I could talk about the polls. We've talked about it before. Let's just say right now, even CNN is doing polls right now where they're saying, here's what it was like when Joe Biden was running. He was up +8 and Hillary Clinton was up +6. And now Trump's even. So even CNN and MSNBC is doing that kind of analysis. So it's
interesting. And we know that Trump being even probably means he's ahead since he tends to underperform
polls.
And yeah. A lot of times people that are going to vote for Trump don't want to admit it and are afraid to say that.
So I've already done a lot of poll analysis. I'll talk about polls, but I'm not going to go through because all the polls and the good polls are definitely showing Trump ahead. But I want to talk about some other factors. The direction of the country, that's always been a good indicator. And the most recent Gallup poll on that, which is the one that people use for it, and actually Gallup's good on this, they're saying only 22% of the country is satisfied with the direction of the country. So at the height of the 80s and the 90s, and right in the very early 2000s, you had satisfaction with the country bumping into the 70s, and then occasionally a little bit into the 80s. So there's this dramatic difference. So 22% of the country is not happy with the state of the country. That is not a good thing for the incumbent president or the incumbent party. And right now, I'm just going to basically say, to a large degree, Harris is the incumbent president. Or whatever,
well,
she's the incumbent.
Of course she
okay.
is.
Okay, so that's it's just something to keep in mind there. Trump is the most popular he's ever been. Unbelievable as it is. It's just, it's really kind of, it blows the mind.
And he's crossed party lines with people like Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, even though she just became a Republican.
Gallup favorability for Trump in 2016. November 2nd through the 5th in that polling, 36% favorability. He was better. He got up to 47% favorability at sometimes when he's running against Biden. But as of now in the Gallup poll, for all Americans, he's running at 50% popularity. And among registered voters, 52% favorable.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Biden, and on the other hand, Harris is underwater. She's running at 47% favorable. 53% unfavorable. So we've never seen this before. We can't belabor the point too much, but just think of everything he's gone through, all the smears, the impeachments, the indictments, the mugshots, everything. So
it's just made him stronger.
Let's just say that the Democrat plan to destroy Donald Trump is not going according to plan.
And it's backfiring, and it's
certainly not going to
creating the exact opposite of what they wanted.
All right, so now something we've been hearing about, that Trump is doing better with working non-white, but with non-white working class folks. And he's always done well with the working white class, white voters, but he's doing well with everybody. He's doing better with Asians. He's doing better with Hispanics. He's doing better with Black Americans. And now we're learning, just as of yesterday or today, that prominent Arab Americans from the Michigan community have endorsed Trump.
Which is interesting since he's so pro-Israel.
But there's been polling showing that Trump is running right even, or maybe slightly ahead of Kamala, with Arab Americans. I think that there's this bifurcation there. The Arab Americans have a certain views on the whole thing with Israel, but family values, what they want their kids taught, all those things, there's a lot of overlap.
They are not into that LGBTQ stuff at all.
So there's no comparison. Okay, well, here's an analysis that was done by CNN. So I was just looking at it. Harris is still ahead among non-college graduates of color by about 28 points. But Biden, according to CNN, was ahead by 45 points. So, and then Harris is only leading Trump by 9 points among union members. Biden was like 30 points
up. And look at the unions that have either endorsed Trump or just refused to endorse anybody when they usually endorse the Democrat.
The Washington Post has refused to endorse
Harris. Los Angeles Times.
So this is nothing like 2020 or 2016. That's why I'm trying to point this out here. So then here's something that's very interesting. I'm going to credit Richard Barris on The People's Pundit. He does a show called The People's Pundit. And he also does big data polling. Very good pollster. And what he did is he looked at a very good indicator of popular vote, something that would predict what the popular vote would be like in a presidential, and it's been accurate since at least 2000. So in other words, we'll say, tell you who gets the most popular votes, Gallup. And what they do is they ask people to self-identify, are they a Republican or a Democrat? And a lot of times people, let's say, who's an independent, but they always vote Democrat, they'll say, oh, I'm a Democrat. Likewise, an independent that always votes for Republican will say, I'm a Republican. In 2000, for example, the Dems had a 5-point margin, 48 to 43%, 5% margin were saying they were Democrat over Republican. And in that year, the Democrats did get the most votes, but it was only by 0.5%. So here's one of those things. This does have a tendency to underestimate Republican performance, but it never overestimates Republican performance. So that's the key point to remember. This never, so here, let's look at 2012, Obama, 47% Democrat, 43% Republican. The delta was 4. And in that case, it was very close. The Democrats had a 3.9% advantage in the popular vote, but the Republicans, they performed by 0.1% better. Then you go to 2020, 48% to 43%, Biden over Trump for popular vote. And it turned out that the popular vote was about 4.5 points more, according to this. Well, right now, this predictor says Republicans 48, Democrats 45. We have not seen that since 2000. Okay, so that is huge. If you were to take a look at the average and how much Republicans underperform and add it on there, you would be looking at maybe a Republican popular vote of 3.5% win a popular vote. That's just an interesting point there. We've never seen this. So it's since 2000, this has never been wrong in predicting who's going to get the most popular vote. And it's always underestimated Republicans at the same time. So that's a good thing. Now, here's a bit more analysis from Gallup. They look at the measures of the presidential election environment and party identification and leaning, where you talked about that, 48% Republican, 45% Democrat. That's a very strong indicator for how the presidential race is going to go. It's called strong. Party better able to handle the most important problem. Well, the most important problem is inflation and cost of living. Right now, the Republicans have an advantage on that. So that's another factor, which they just say, whatever the important problem of the time, you know, which party can handle it, is going to be favored in the presidential. U.S. satisfaction. What is the overall state of satisfaction with the United States, the direction it's going? Well, if there's immense dissatisfaction, the party in power takes a hit. And right now, that's Biden, so that's a Republican. So economic confidence, Republican favors. So basically, there's all these factors favor Republicans. There we go on that. So the top four issues for Republicans and for the country in general and everybody is number one, inflation and cost of living. Number two, economy and jobs. Number three, immigration and border control. Number four, abortion. Now, that varies from state to state, but let's just take a look at a very important state, Pennsylvania, how those issues play out. In Pennsylvania, inflation and cost of living, 38.5% identify that as the most important. For economy and jobs, 14.7% say that's most important. Immigration and border control, 14.2%, just behind the economy and jobs. And abortion, trailing at 10.8%.
Yeah, what they care about in Pennsylvania is issues like fracking and being out of work.
Yeah, but my point on this is just to show you where abortion is in that
case. And it's the only thing she talks with passion about. It's the only time she doesn't sound like a robot is when she's talking about abortion.
Now, just as a quick aside, I was talking with my wife, Michaeline, and I agree with her. They've always underpolled Trump in terms of women. He's always done better with women than they say he's going to do. And I believe that Trump is going to overperform with women. In other words, the gigantic gap they're talking about now is not going to be as big as they say.
And what a demeaning view of women to assume women only care about abortion. A lot of women care about the safety of their families and the borders and the price of groceries. And they don't want their kids going to school here and that they should have a sex change operation. A lot of women care about that, if you'll pardon me.
Yep. Now, there are some factors that don't favor a Trump victory, and they're the same old factors we deal with election cycle after election cycle. Bob, why don't you tell me?
Well, they call him Hitler every other word. I guess people don't want Hitler in power.
That's true. But
And yet their policies are, they're the ones that are anti-Semitic and do infanticide.
Well, they're the ones that,
so who's actually acting like Hitler?
They're the ones who are locking up political prisoners. They're the ones who are using the law to go after their political opponents. That's
trying to remove Trump from the ballot.
Prosecutions are.
And even the redistribution of wealth at least reminds us of the early Nazi. People forget Nazi means National Socialist Party.
Yeah. But we have, as per usual, a fraudulent media, a fake media covering things. They've done studies on Google. Google is just so horrible. And they've shown studies how it influences people and how they think of things. And all the social media now. However, I'm going to say one thing, though. The social media is mostly dominated by the left, but X is a positive factor. So I guess I can toss
Elon Musk.
Yeah, because of Elon Musk. We can toss that back into the positive column there. So they're hostile to Republicans, they're hostile to conservatives, they're hostile to Christians, and certainly hostile to Trump.
You know, one real irony was when Hillary Clinton came out and talked about the fact that Trump was going to speak in Madison Square Gardens, and she mentions that back in the 30s, they had a Nazi rally there.
39.
You know who else had a rally at Madison Square Gardens? The Clintons at the Democratic Convention that nominated Bill, and Hillary was there. I bet the mainstream media isn't telling us that.
Well,
or reminding us of that, which should be obvious to everybody.
They have a lot of great events happen at the Madison Square Garden.
It's only because, by the way, filled with Nazis.
The Madison Square Garden that exists today
is not even the same building.
It was built in 68.
Yeah, it's not.
The other one was built in like 1898 or something like that. Then we have our kids being indoctrinated by their schools, whether they're elementary or junior high or high school or certainly college.
There's a lot of Democrats and liberals that don't like that, that feel that that's just a bridge too far.
Okay, well, good. And then our intelligence agencies are working against him, the DOJ. So, you know, those are all negative things there. But that's something that most Republicans have been dealing with to some degree or another.
Well, you know, people are coming out that were on his cabinet that are betraying him.
Yes.
But what people forget is these were people that were fired by him.
Right.
So they had an axe to grind.
Yes. But even with all of this, given all the other things I mentioned, all the positive factors, I would be darn near 100% confident of a Trump victory. But the one thing that just keeps me from being fully confident, guess what that is, Bob?
The cheating factor.
Yeah, that's right.
And especially when the DOJ is suing Virginia and demanding that they put people that have admitted to being illegal back on their election rolls.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things happening, and I'm not going to belabor it because I've been following it, but there's a lot of things happening that are just counter voter
integrity. But you do feel that we're in better shape than we were with the last voter?
I do. And I'm going to build a case here because I've been thinking about this a lot as to why even right now I believe that there's no way that they can overcome the margin. In other words, I believe that...
You think it's going to be such a landslide that even though they'll cheat, it won't be enough cheating?
The goal of being too big to rig, I believe that we are going to accomplish that and that we'll be able to overcome that margin of fraud. But let me just give you some thinking behind this and some inductive reasoning around this. Okay, so first of all, we have a clear perspective of what happened in 2016, 2020, and 2024. Just really quickly, 2016, they did not believe really Trump had a chance.
They were cheating in that one too.
I know.
But that one was too big.
They don't think they thought he still had a chance. They weren't really that well prepared. But I do believe that us waiting forever, ever for Pennsylvania, I believe literally they were trying to see if they could pull enough more ballots in, and they couldn't do it. 2020, they had a major effort, but 40,000 votes more and Trump would have tied. 70,000 votes more and Trump would have won.
Yeah, so he did really close, even despite all that cheating.
Well, not the cheating, but think about the environment. COVID-19, that was devastating for any president sitting in office.
And he still bounced back. Okay, hold that thought, Mike. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Looking for a book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a six-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to our program. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
So just to complete my thought on the 2020, that election cycle, popular vote, which, by the way, was predicted by the party identification in his Gallup poll, turned out to be pretty close. And Biden did win about 7 million by popular vote. And I actually believe most of those were real votes. But I believe that there was enough votes in the swing states to make the difference. So we have a country that was very angry and upset about what was going on with COVID. They were blaming Trump, and the media worked nonstop to paint him with that nonstop. So I believe that did happen. The reason I'm saying that is because I want to contrast it to what we have right now. At that time, everybody was voting absentee, by mail. There was millions and millions of votes just floating around that they could harvest.
Of course, that's the situation now, too.
But no, but actually the difference is the number of absentee ballot votes floating around is maybe 60-70% of what it was in 2020. It's way less. There's millions and millions less of those votes floating around. There's states that have curtailed. There's less absentee ballot requests. So there's a whole lot less absentee ballots floating around. It's dramatic. It's a big difference. So the number of ballots that they can have a chance to go find, you know, here's an empty house, here's a ballot sitting here, we can harvest it, we can then repurpose it later down the road, is far less than it was in 2020 by millions of votes. And of course, it takes a lot of effort. See, that's the other thing, is finding these ballots and then filling them in. It is very labor intensive.
What is the limitation this time? Last time they were saying that for a couple of days to a week after the election, they could still count ballots. Where are they capping it this time?
Well, the Fifth Circuit just said that you could only accept ballots that by mail that were postmarked by the day of the election. That was the Fifth Circuit.
Well, what about the things like where they went out in the night and just found an extra box of ballots that they didn't know about? Are they going to be allowed to do that kind of stuff again?
It's going to vary from state to state. What I will say is that in general, things are better, but not perfect.
Well, I hope states like Georgia and Arizona are being more carefully watched this time because they were Republicans.
They are,
so I think Republicans let it slip through their fingers.
There's higher levels of scrutiny. It's not going to be perfect, but the environment is not as conducive to do what they did in 2020.
Yeah, I think probably a lot of the Democrats' game this time is after the election. I think it's going to be in reverse. I think Trump will win. They will claim that he cheated. They will do everything they can to not certify him.
So, for example, in 2020, 9 days to the election, Democrats had brought in around 30 million votes, and the Republicans only brought in about 23 million at that time, so they were quite a bit behind. But this cycle here, when we get to 2024, we have the model Republicans. They're actually running ahead of the Democrats this time around. And if you go state by state, for example, in Nevada and Arizona, the Republicans are blowing the Democrats out of the water. Now, what's very important about this early voting is, let's just say, there's something in politics called a super voter. I'm a super voter. I vote every election. I vote the special elections. I vote the primaries. I vote the general. I'll brag a little bit, but I haven't missed a vote since 1980. Okay. But you are, Bob, a super voter as well. However, the fact you're registered as independent, I put you in a different category.
I don't vote in the primaries.
Yeah, you don't. But there's a lot of Republicans, like people in our class, I bet you a lot of them are super voters. They're classified that way. So let's say I vote early. Well, if you look at it, that's nice, but I was going to vote anyway. So what does that get you, right? But the purpose of the early voting was to really focus in on new voters and low propensity or mid propensity voters. And the Republicans have been doing that. So both in Nevada and Arizona, and also just what I've been reading in other states, the Republicans have been pursuing and getting low propensity voters to vote early. So when they come in, that's a net positive because low propensity voter, like I've said before, if you've got a person that's not in the habit of voting, saying, hey, please vote Bob or please vote John, and then counting on them to show up the voting day, but if you can get there to fill that ballot out, send it in, that's net. So the Republicans are outdoing Democrats on getting low propensity and new voters to vote. Well, that is a real win, and that is 180 degrees from what was happening in 2020 and 2022. So that is a huge positive.
So your caveat is Trump wins unless they cheat, but your caveat on the cheating is it's much less likely that they will succeed with it this time.
I think the ability to do it, the amount of margin that Trump is generating, I believe blows their ability to cheat out of the water. However, here's my thinking that kind of provides evidence, not a complete proof, but an evidence. Think about like Wisconsin. I believe they cheated in Wisconsin in 2020. But they had polls showing Biden winning there by 7 points. There was one poll that said 17 points. So if they have an infinite amount of effort to cheat, why would they want to make themselves look incredible? Why not just throw a few more 100,000 votes in there and win by 3 or 4 points instead of a 0.2 point, right? So they haven't shown this ability to even come close to matching what their polling showing, yet they still come out with this polling all the time here. Well, right now what we're seeing, Bob, is we had the temporary boost of the polls after Harris was declared the candidate. That was the phase designed to get the donors to give money. Hey, look, she's a viable candidate. Give that money. All that money you were giving to Biden, give it to Harris. And they succeed in that. She got a lot of money very quickly. And the other thing was they wanted to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right. Well, they were able to keep that pumped up for a while. But then I believe that people behind the scenes, there's cold, calculating, analytical people in the Democrat Party. They're not crazy ideologues. They look at everything. They look at, say, you know, what's really the situation? And they looked at what's really the situation. And they said, ooh, my heavens, we don't have the resources. Because if they did have the resources to cheat, then that poll narrative that they need to give them the coverage.
Right, because they want the polls to match what they're going to do in the cheating, which makes it more legitimate.
Right.
They say, well, we expected it because
they
polled.
But we've never seen this collapse on their polling strategy until this point. We actually have polls that were showing Biden ahead at 7 points, showing Trump even now. So I believe that they know they don't have it. So they're saying, okay, we can't do it this time. So I do believe that their polls are trying to look more realistic. Now, that is inductive reasoning, just thinking behind the scenes how I would be doing it if I were them, just sort of putting myself in their shoes. Yeah.
Which makes me think a lot more effort is going to go into their end and after game of Trump wins, but they try to arrest him. Trump wins, but they refuse to certify him, things like
that.
The
resistance.
Yeah.
Right.
He's a convicted felon. He's Hitler. I mean, who's going to be the certifier? Kamala Harris. You think she's going to do that? I don't think so.
So that's my reasoning there, is that I don't think they can do it. And then you have all this end game rhetoric, which is so irresponsible. I mean, Trump has now gone through 2 assassination attempts. And what's their end game? Trump's a fascist. Trump's Hitler.
Yeah.
And right
there
now,
there was a joint statement put out by the Republicans to lower the temperature of the rhetoric, and Kamala Harris wouldn't do it.
No, no. And then
the American people need to hear the truth.
Let me talk a little bit about John Kelly, a 4-star general whose son did die in combat. God bless his soul. My heart goes out to him on that. However, he did serve in the White House. When you're in the White House, there's supposed to be a certain level of confidentiality. Let me ask you a question, Bob. Have you heard of Erwin Rommel? Erwin Rommel, the general, the Desert Fox?
Rommel. Okay.
Erwin Rommel.
Yes,
okay.
yes.
Well, most people that done any kind of military science study will tell you that he was a pretty darn good general. He's also one of the people that tried to take out Hitler.
Yes, and that's why they eventually assassinated him.
So let's say you're having a conversation, and I don't know all, but there was a number of German generals that are actually very competent, very good generals, very good. So let's say Donald Trump's having a conversation. They bring up the issue of German generals. They're also Nazi generals. And he says, you know, those were good generals.
Yeah, he might have been referring to someone
right.
like Rommel, who wasn't a Nazi, but was a German.
Or let's say when World War II was over and we were fighting the space race, what the common saying was?
The scientists were German scientists.
Our Germans are better than theirs. Because the Soviets also got some of the German scientists.
Right, right.
There was brilliant German scientists, but you could also call them Nazi scientists working for Hitler, right? So let's say you have a conversation like that. Okay,
think Trump might have even made some off the cuff?
I think he might have been having a conversation like that. But if you were intellectually honest, you'd know he was not praising Hitler.
And you know that he talks without a filter and he gets taken out of context.
And
it's also possible that Kelly just made it up because he was fired, because there's people that were there and they said they never heard anything.
It's possible, but regardless, the bottom line is that he's either lying.
Or he's exaggerating, or
basically, even if they had a conversation in the ballpark about Hitler, it's like saying just because Trump said that Putin's a strong leader.
It'd be like someone saying Putin. At least Hitler made the trains run on time, something like that.
Well, I mean, let's go this way. I mean, there's a lot of very evil and sociopathic people in the world. Germany had plenty in the 1930s, but not every one of them rose to become Hitler, right? I mean, he was evil, he was sociopathic, he was vile, but I have to say this, he had something that allowed him to rise. He probably, I hate to say it, but he probably was a little charismatic.
Well, we know he was charismatic. He was a great orator. Unfortunately,
and you call yourself Jewish?
He was an evil orator.
Charismatic, Bob. Charismatic's a positive term.
No, well, not to me it isn't, because to me, charismatic people can also be brainwashing.
Well, what if Trump said that?
He was the most evil person that ever lived, but he was a speaker that got people's attention and mesmerized
them. That's my whole point here. Point here is
Trump gets it out of context.
So John, and so Kelly can get out of there and do a little bit of rationalization. And I will say this: he's part of the military-industrial complex, and Trump is talking about shutting down the Ukraine war.
But he could have also made it up in cloth, because thinking that Trump was a Hitler, then talk about rationalizing. They could rationalize anything to get him out of office, even if we have to lie, even if we have to cheat. He's dangerous. We think he's dangerous.
Yeah, so enough said that. I don't believe one way or the other Don Kelly's not being truthful.
If Trump said something construed that way, he didn't mean it that way. And obviously, he's a supporter of Israel. His own daughter has converted to Judaism. It's just so ridiculous.
If you misportray what somebody said, then you're lying. At the minimum, that's what happens.
Well, even with the Bible, like I always say, you take a verse of the Bible out of context, you can make the Bible say whatever you want it to also.
Okay, so with that said, here we go. I'm going to go ahead and say what I think is going to happen here. I think that we're going to get 312 electoral votes. Trump's going to win all the swing states.
The swing states. You're including Arizona and Nevada as the swing states.
Including Nevada, yes, definitely, all of them.
And Georgia's a swing state.
One of the swing states, including Nevada, which he never won Nevada.
I don't think he'll take New York, but do you suppose he might do better in New York?
He's going to do better across the board.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think he has a chance in Minnesota or Virginia, but I'm not going to say that.
How about us taking the House and Senate?
Let me finish up this. I'm talking about 148.5 million votes total cast, 75 and 72. So 75 million for Trump and maybe 73 or 72 for Kamala. Trump takes the popular vote. Okay, now the House, what I did is I looked at the Democrats that are leaning Democrat or solid Democrat. I looked at the Republicans leaning Democrat or solid Republican. And then I looked at the toss-ups. I went through, I looked at the toss-ups, and I gave 15 of the toss-ups out of 32 to the Republicans. And I think that's being very conservative, which gets us to 222 seats versus 213 seats. So we hold the House. And that's a conservative estimate. For the Senate.
What about the Senate?
The Senate, we go to 52. I think it was 52. Picking up 52. With a chance to get to 54.
It's so important, ladies and gentlemen, for us to get the House and the Senate also. You have to be up and down voters, because if Trump wins and we don't hold on to Congress, they're just going to impeach him again.
I think and the thing is, I actually moved Carrie Lake, who had moved out of toss-up and to lean Democrat, district, because she hasn't been looking into the polls, but things have been going so well in Arizona in terms of early vote and the polling.
She may grab the coattails.
I think that she might, with Trump's coattails, she could possibly squeeze in there. But right now, though, people have it leaning Democrat.
And Cruz in Texas?
It's not close.
He's not going to lose.
That's, no,
because he keeps ringing the alarm bell.
Well, of course.
Okay, well, my prediction is Trump wins by a landslide, but they refuse to certify it, call him a convicted felon. There's riots. They say we cannot in good conscience certify
Hitler. The positive spin on things, Bob.
Well, I'm being positive that he's going to win by a landslide, but I don't think positively about what the Democrats are going to do. That I will freely admit.
All right.
All right, folks. Well, we will find out. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Okay. I'm ready.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.